You're listening to the Keith Blakemore Noble Radio Show. Here's your host, Keith Blakemore Noble.
Hey, hello, hello. Welcome to another episode. Great to have you here, and it's great to have my guest this week, this episode. My guest, he is an excellent business coach. He's business coach to a lot of people I know. He's also, I'm very happy to say, my business coach as well. I'm learning a lot from him, and I know you're going to learn a lot too. Now, Ian is more than just a business coach. He's also a business speaker. He has coached and mentored hundreds of businesses throughout the UK. In the last 15 years, he's delivered over 450 professional business seminars and motivational speeches. As an experienced Hampshire-based business coach and business speaker with an extensive and colourful career path, taking him from being a Brixton police officer to a corporate director, with all of that under his belt, you are guaranteed exciting and relevant content drawn from his extensive knowledge, experience and background. As a multi-award-winning business performance coach, his passion is for helping others in business, and that passion has never waned. He's a partner, a dad, a brother. He's a trusted friend, and he is always up. In fact, as he likes to say to his clients, when you're up, I'm up, and when you're down, I'm up. That's my guest today, Ian Dixon. Hey, Ian, how are you doing, sir?
Very good. It's kind of strange to hear that sort of read back to me sometimes. So, because no pressure, you know, you're kind of like up against the, you know, now I've got to fulfill that bio description. So, but yeah, you know, in fact, a lot of that content was written many years ago, but of course it's still just as relevant today. Yeah, you know, and in fact, you mentioned about how much I love what I do. That has actually grown over the years. And I think you tend to find that you've landed in a job if your love for that job doesn't wane, it actually increases. So, and I think the more confident and the more knowledgeable I've become over the years, the more I love what I do. So I actually, you know, probably I'm 17 years in. I probably was in year 7 or 8 before I fully understood what it was that I was doing. You know, it was just like, I was still learning my craft. So, and I think as you become more confident in how best to deliver my work, I think the more you tend to enjoy it as well. So, you know, listen, we're all making it up, right? So, you know, at some point, you know, we start to understand what it is we're making up. So, yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, and actually, it's lovely to be here. So it's really good to do something like this with somebody that I work with as well. So obviously, because we know each other very well. So thank you for the opportunity.
No, thank you for agreeing to be on here. And it's, you know, your reaction to hearing your bio, it's interesting. The number of people go, oh wow, I haven't actually heard it read out loud before now. Oh, that's what I do, is it? Oh, it's interesting because we sometimes don't. We don't sort of read our bio back to ourselves that often, I guess. But we've heard your bio now, and you've heard your bio. So we've know a little bit about who you are. But underneath all of that, who is Ian?
God, I guess the CV answer is, you know, the whole husband, dad, brother, granddad. I am very passionate about what I do, about everything I've ever done, to be honest with you. I've always been very passionate about what I do. A bit of a softy, really, I think, in that regard. You know, there is this perception of being, in fact, I've just been working with a company and I sat down around a table with about 8 ladies and I heard one of them whisper to the other one, he looks a bit stern. And I'm not stern at all. But, and, you know, I know for a fact that very often the early perception of me is that I'm a man in a grey suit and not particularly friendly. But actually, I think I am a big softy. You know, I wear my heart on my sleeve. And I think anybody in business, in all honesty, I just reposted something from May last year. Business is personal. And I think the more that you let your guard down and let people in, people will engage with you. So it took me a while to be able to do that because I'm quite a private person. But certainly with the social media platforms, the more you become open and honest about who you are, as long as you're not somebody that's doing something you shouldn't, then I think people do understand you as a person. So, and of course, that is a big part of success in business now. People understand who you are, not what it is that you do. So,
Absolutely, absolutely. So, I mean, your career, you weren't always a business coach, obviously. Your career has kind of taken, as you say, it's taken a colourful career path from being a police officer to a corporate director, and then on to becoming a coach. How did that path happen? How did you end up on that journey? What kind of took you on that route?
Well, the short version is in 2004 I went to work and. I'd sensed for a couple of days something didn't feel right. I had a big corporate job, six-figure salary, 2004, and so it hadn't felt right for a couple of days. There'd been a lot of redundancies. I'd made over 1,000 people redundant over a three-year period. You know, we were on the big decline. And I went to work one morning, and I can remember feeling uncomfortable, didn't know why, and then I got invited into the departure lounge and got handed the envelope, and 15 minutes I was out of the building. And so I was sat at home in 2004 thinking, shit, you know, what am I going to do? And I had moaned and complained about corporate life and poor leadership, poor communication, poor strategy, going off in all sorts of directions. And this is why the business I was in was steadily declining. And I thought, well, go fix it. You know, actually, even if I feel a little bit like King Canute stood at the waterline thinking, you know, go back. I thought, well, I'll make my effort. You know, I'll do my bit. So the fat check arrived for my redundancy, and I went to America and trained. I did, as you'll be very, very familiar with, did an NLP diploma and then did 3 weeks training in Las Vegas, actually, on how to coach and the process of coaching. And then came back and tried to make a living. For the first few years, I think most people will relate to the struggle. You know, you go below the baseline and then you start to come up. And that was probably a three-year journey. And then we've had some amazing years, and then about 4 or 5 years in, the speaking work started to sort of come to fruition. So which I didn't schedule, plan, or set as an objective at all. It was just something that kind of happened. And I'm an introvert, you know, it's the last thing I wanted to do was stand in front of anybody. But the weird thing is, which is a kind of a little bit what life is like. If you can learn to love something you hate, you never know just how much you might love it eventually. So, and now I love it. You know, it's a privilege, actually, and I see it as a privilege.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's speaking, as we know, speaking in front of audiences is a massive fear for huge numbers of people. We know it can offer significant, amazing benefits once you get over that, but so many people, they get the opportunity to speak and they find a million and one excuses not to do it. So, oh, I would do, but I'm washing my hair that night, or I've got paint that I've got to watch dry. We come up with all manner of excuses to avoid it because it's something that's so scary. And I guess at the point where you started getting these opportunities to speak, you could have gone one of two ways. You could have gone, oh, no, that's not me. I'm not a speaker. I'm a coach. I'm not going to speak. And being comfortable and stuff like that. Or you could have gone, oh, this is terrifying, but I can see why I would want to do it and find your way through. What do you think was it that enabled you to look beyond the initial sort of, oh, and actually turn it into something which has now become a very successful part of what you do?
So 2004, there was no social media. To go to market was essentially pay to print, pay to outsource telemarketing, or pick up the telephone yourself, go knock on doors, maybe some email spamming, you know, get a list and start spamming into people's inboxes. But it was definitely more limited as to your broadness of marketing options. And somebody said to me, who is actually a multimillionaire, said to me, he was asking me how it was going. And I said, it's really tough. And he said, look, doing what you do, if you want to be successful in business, get on stage. And that, to this day, I can still hear him saying it. We were sat eating spaghetti bolognese. He had a tie over his shoulder. I had a tie over my shoulder because we were eating it on our laps. Spaghetti bolognese on your laps is a talent, if you can hear it. Trying to avoid getting it down our fronts. And so I came home and thought, well, let's have a go. I've got a DVD of my very first ever 3-hour presentation to about 18 people. I've never watched it back, and I don't think I ever would. But, you know, again, something I told myself was the second time I present, I'll be more confident and better than the first time, and the third time will be better than the second, and so on, as long as I'm soliciting feedback and what have you. And very slowly, probably over the course of a year, I grew in confidence. I was starting to attract people in. And in all honesty, Keith, I think what happened was I ended up doing something that I feared, but it was something that I was actually quite good at. But I had no idea. I'd never, ever done it because the fear was in the way. I'm sure there are people that would be amazing fast drivers, but they're frightened of getting in a car and going fast. But actually, they have an inbuilt skill, talent, or, you know, their DNA actually means they've got all this ability to be able to drive a car fast. So, and I think public speaking was probably something that lay dormant in me, but the fear was stopping me from giving it a go. I don't have any formal training. I've just got in the ring and got punched a few times, and now I know how to duck and weave and do a little bit, give a little bit back. So, the short answer is it was born from somebody saying to me, this is a good route to market in 2004, which is infinitely better than having to pick up the phone or advertising in the papers and what have you. It's never felt like it's been a marketing tool for me, but of course it is. So, if I stand on stage and do a keynote at a business show and there's 1,000 people in the audience, I tell you 30, 40 people will queue up to want your business card and want to talk to you. So, mm-hmm. So that's marketing. You know, that's good, strong positioning is very powerful. So I'd recommend it to anybody, even if you're frightened of it. I'm not saying that everybody will get through and be great, but what I would say is get through and find out, you know, is at the very least. It took me a long time not to kind of, if I said, dare I say it, get good. It took me a long time to feel confident that actually I'm okay at this. So, but I just kept going.
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, there's a couple of things that stand out for me in there. One was that you did it, even though it was something that was uncomfortable, you did it because you knew that the benefits outweighed the future benefits outweighed the present discomfort. And in a way, the discomfort you had now is a lot less than the discomfort you would have if you continued not to do it. And the other interesting thing I picked up from there was you didn't actually get any formal training on it. And I guess that's the thing a lot of people think, a lot of people allow them to hold themselves back from undertaking a new path. Oh, I need training. But you kind of, I mean, I guess we all know how to speak because that's, we speak, but you kind of recognize the need and you just went out there and did it.
Yeah, I think if I was to put some advice in there, solicit feedback, whether that be from the audience or from somebody that you have respect for as a speaker. It's hard. I need to be careful what I say. There are groups that are inward facing that are, if you like, speaking organizations, but those groups are groups of people that are learning their trade. So be careful where you go. Like you said it perfectly, you know, we're all speakers. Everybody's a communicator. If you understand your topic, if you are passionate about your topic, and you are brave enough, confident enough to stand in front of an audience, you'll shine. you don't need to know you need to stand on this side of the stage for 3 seconds. You need to stand on this. It's like, I honestly, I find it, well, I can see, well, whenever I see somebody speaking that has, and there is a man in particular, I won't say his name, it is so false and so obvious, and there is no congruency. You can just tell. So whereas I think if somebody stands up and they but they're passionate about what they do, it shines through. And that has always been my kind of take on the whole speaking thing. So honest from the heart. Yeah, I might make some mistakes. There's some golden rules. You never overrun. Sometimes I might speed up a little bit and be, I'll make mistakes. But I don't think really the formal training for public speaking, maybe a few bits, but all the convoluted stuff I find abhorrent. I think it's trickery. I just don't like it. So, you've got to stand here, you've got to stand back, you've got to stand forward. Some of it makes sense. I've spoken to another big speaker about the importance of moving into the audience from time to time and making sure you don't create this invisible barrier. Nobody taught me that. It just makes sense to me. If I was sat in the audience, I can sometimes sense it's a him and us kind of scenario. Whereas if you walk in or keep moving around and spend some time with the audience, eye contact, it's human stuff. You don't need to be taught that. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess that's one of the things with speaking. People think, what if I forget what I'm going to say, or what if they don't like what I'm saying? And I guess the thing to remember is mostly people that generally are there because they want to hear what you have to say. Mm-hmm. They want to learn from you. So they're going to listen to what you have to say. They're going to trust what you have to say. And what if I forget what I'm going to say? Well, you know what you're talking about. That's why you're there. You're the expert. And just kind of treat it as just you and a friend having a chat about something.
And no one wants you to fail. They're there. They want you to see, they want good stuff. They don't want to watch you fall over. So.
No, exactly. And I mean, I've seen speakers who they've kind of lost and just something has just thrown them off completely and that they get really nervous about it. And you can see the audience is sort of on their side, willing them. Come on, you can do it. You're back. Yay. Reminds me of a couple of great comedians I've seen do this. They go doing their act and something happens and they go way off on a tangent somewhere, completely forget where they are, and they make no bones about it. I mean, Billy Connolly does that a lot, or he used to, obviously he doesn't anymore. And I also saw Bill Bailey did that as well, and both of them, they rambled off on a tangent, finished that story. It's like, where was I? You, what was I talking about before I went on that? Oh, brilliant, thanks. And then straight back on it and just go with it. And it got a laugh. And yeah, nice, nice. Important thing you touched on there, feedback. What would you say is, or how did you go about embracing feedback? Because sometimes when we get feedback, sometimes it can be a bit painful if we think we've done something really well and somebody goes, well, actually, that was not very good. The ego gets in the way. We're going, how do you go about absorbing the feedback in such a way that enables you to grow without it denting your feelings, going, oh god, maybe I'm rubbish at this?
Well, first of all, is making sure that you are asking somebody to give you feedback whose opinion you value. It actually leads me into this whole concept of advice and opinion. If you ask your audience and they are your delegates, they'll give you their opinion. If you have somebody who you respect as a speaker to sit in the room and give you feedback, that's advice. So so straight away, by default, the information that comes to you, you should feel comfortable listening to. I can remember the very first time I had my coach in the room, 2005 maybe. She sat at the back with a pen and paper, and for the whole 3 hours all I saw was writing stuff down. I thought, oh my god, she's gonna have mountains of stuff to throw at me. And it was all common sense stuff. I for any kind of thing really, it'll be, what do I take that is of value to me? what was fair enough, but no, I'm comfortable keeping that. And how would I change what she said to make it better, even better than what was given to me? So, and I'll go through that process with any kind of feedback, really. Never assume that the feedback's going to be perfect. In fact, it may be actually, I get, you know, one of them was don't drink out of a water bottle. You know, don't have a bottle of water, have a glass of water. And I thought, well, actually, I'm less likely to spill out of a bottle than I am out of a glass. I'm quite likely to knock over a glass. And of course, you can't get as much in a glass as you can a bottle. So it was just stuff like that where I thought, yeah, fair enough, I get it, but I'm keeping the bottle. Mm-hmm. Another one I can remember her saying, there's a piece of advice I was given very early on, which was when you're delivering a grenade, when you're sending out a message that's incredibly powerful, make sure you give it the before you go again. Because when that lands, wait for it to explode and let it go rather than just like get onto the next one. Mm. And that's been a very powerful tip for me that I didn't get, but she gave it to me and I've used it ever since. I've handed it out a few times to people saying, you like ding ding ding, you need to, when you, because you throw out some amazing grenades, wait for them to explode before you pop on to the next thing. Still hasn't done it. So some people won't take it on. So, but that one for me was a winner. That is an incredibly powerful, something you'd get at formal training, I'm sure, when you deliver an important sensitive message, just stop and let it land before you move on. And those 5 or 6 seconds, maybe 2 or 3 seconds, will feel like a minute for the audience. So very, very powerful. I think you thought my screen had frozen, didn't you?
I kind of wondered for a second.
Yeah, all good.
No, you're right. The power of the pause. The pause is such an important thing. And delivering messages, yeah. And all of this took you through your journey to becoming the business coach that you are now. You've got huge numbers of clients all around the country. One time when we spoke, you gave me the stats. I can't remember what they're. How many new businesses? Do you remember? So how many new businesses start up each month or each year?
Yeah, so, and this, I only got this stat last year and I'm like 17 years in. It's just like, why didn't I know this before? So it blew me away. And I was looking to see, I went looking early last year, early 21, just to see, I was doing some research into how many people that were either made redundant or furloughed. And I had, you know, got somebody working with me that wanted to start a business. So I thought, I bet lots of people have done that. So I went on and found out that there was a huge spike when we first got locked down in early 20, and it stayed up. So, and the number is, because everyone will want to know, the number of new businesses that this is incorporated, so this is limited companies, is as much as 70,000 a month. 70,000 new businesses, up to 70,000 new businesses are incorporated every month. Now, obviously, a lot of those don't make it. A lot of them never even sell a product. So, but that doesn't include sole traders and people that are, you know, doing their own thing. So easily 150,000-200,000 people are setting off on a journey to do their own thing every month. So, so any B2B type business that's listening to your podcast is thinking, you know, I'm struggling to get customers. You've got literally a horizon of boats coming at you every single day. People that are daft enough, have no idea what they're doing. They're looking for help, looking for support. They're looking for your product, service, and your advice. There's lots of businesses out there. So up to 70,000 a month, a lot. So that's incorporated.
That's a lot. There are bound to be people who are listening to this or watching this who will be thinking, it'd be nice to do my own business, but I know I've been there, and the thing that kicked me into doing it was, much like yourself, redundancy. It's amazing how many people redundancy is the thing that kicked us into doing this. But for those who perhaps don't want to wait until redundancy, but they're kind of thinking, oh, I'd love to do my own business, but what kind of succinct bits of advice would you give them to at least get them started on that process of being one of the 70,000 and having a good chance of being one of those businesses that are still around a few years later on? Because I know huge numbers also fold every year.
In fact, it was one of the tips that we put out in November was TNT, try new things. I think that the millennials that listen to your podcast will get this anyway. Mm-hmm. But I think we live in an age now where you can actually start up a business almost for nothing. You know, you can get started on pretty much no money at all. I think if you've been made redundant, you've got time. You might not have money, but you will have time. But you may not have the skill set. So a business will only ever grow to the size, to your level of incompetence. So I've worked with business owners that never understood, why doesn't my business get beyond this point? And it's not because of the market or their product. It's because they haven't grown. So all I would say is, obviously, which I'm going to say because of my what I do for a living, but there's lots of me. Is seek out, because there's lots of it you can get for nothing, seek out support, advice, and make sure it comes from a good source that will help you avoid some of the pitfalls or mistakes, because you've got time. If you haven't got money, then you don't want to be making, you know, costly mistakes. But what I would say is just try, you know, try different things. It could be a t-shirt business, it could be gym wear, it could be restaurant, you know, it could be something big, it could be something very small. If you have a job, then get a hustle going and see. If the most important thing is, if you don't love the process, it won't ever work. You've got to enjoy the process of running a business, actually often more than the widget that you're making. So you know, I've got plumbers that hated being business owners, but they loved to plumb. I can remember a baker, you know, he ended up not being able to bake anymore and he hated his business. So because he couldn't do what he set the business up to do. So that's why he called me in. He said, you know, I want to be a baker. I'm ending up being a business owner. And how do I get out of it? So I want to go back and bake.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And that kind of ties in neatly to something you said very early on here, that here you are 17 years later on and you still absolutely love what you do. In fact, if anything, you love it even more than when you started. Mm. I guess that's one of the secrets of your success and why you're continuing to do it.
I mean, it tells you that you have landed into, you know, we're all here to serve. It's just it's understanding how, you know, how am I best equipped, whether it be DNA, mindset, attitude, height, width, doesn't matter, but how am I, what's the best function for me? You know, what's going to give me the most enjoyment? It doesn't have to be the easiest thing, on the contrary, but it has to be something that gives you a sense of achievement, sense of satisfaction, and you feel like you're doing something that almost you were made to do. You know, you look at, I'm a big Formula One fan, you know, Lewis Hamilton, age 7, said he was going to be a world champion. It's just like he knew that early on that was his calling. So very few of us actually ever truly find it. That's the longest, you know, I've done so many jobs, from driving taxis to cleaning windows to scrubbing floors at Gatwick Airport, record shops, retail, IT. I've done so many different jobs. I enjoyed them all until I did this, and then I realized they were okay. No, this is what I love. So
it's
keep kissing frogs, you know, keep trying different things.
There you go. Yeah, it's interesting how sometimes the thing that we absolutely love is the thing that we were passionate about when we're really young, and then kind of forget about when we grow up and we do what we're told we're supposed to do. As your example with Lewis Hamilton there, I remember my sister reminded me once, she found out that I'd studied hypnosis after a long career in IT. She reminded me when I was about 10, I was fascinated and obsessed with hypnosis. I used to go around pretending I could hypnotize people, and I'd forgotten all this. Apparently, I said, I'm going to find out how this stuff works, and I'm going to become a great hypnotist. And then life got in the way. But now here I am. I'm a hypnotist. And thoroughly enjoying it more than any of the other stuff I've done.
It's a true story, and very It's a true story and very strange. I took a ticky box test, careers test, at age 16. You know, it's like 1976. No computers. And that ticky box test said that I was best suited to be a teacher or a trainer. Mm. And so I went and joined the police force. You know, of course, completely ignored that and went off and did what I wanted to do. But here I am. And when I got to 44, I ended up going away and training to be a coach and a speaker. Yeah. And it's like, how weird, you know, maybe it was destiny. I needed to go and do all that stuff to be able to come back and then feel qualified and equipped to be able to do the job I do now.
Yeah, I think that's an important point to recognize. Sometimes, you know, we have our childhood dreams and we don't fulfill them until much later in life. Don't look upon what the rest of you did as being a waste. Oh, I should have done this much sooner. Look upon that as getting you all the different well-rounded experience that enables you to be really good at doing the thing you always wanted to do when you were young. Because I'm sure a lot of these other jobs that you've had, you've picked up bits from there which really directly and indirectly feed into helping you to be such an amazing and powerful coach, which you wouldn't have been if you'd just gone straight into it, for example.
Yeah, I completely agree. So, you know, some of the jobs I've done, at the time I was thinking, you know, why am I doing this? Or what value, what can I take away? You know, even my police training, I thought, you know, when I left the police force, I thought that all those years of driving fast cars and sniffing out, you know, drug dealers and what have you, I can't use any of that in the workplace. But when I look back on it, communication, leadership, confidence, even the public speaking elements, you know, there are so many things that I learned back as a young impressionable teenager that I probably still use today. So yeah, and retail, you know, my retail years, now that I'm working with clients in retail, then of course I call upon some of those skills. So I'm not sure I've used any of my window cleaning skills since I've been a coach, but there will be something in there, I'm sure. So
it'll come along.
Yeah, maybe it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just waiting for the right moment. unfortunately, time, as always, is against us. I mean, we could talk about this for ages and ages. We do have to wrap it up. For people who are listening and thinking, I like what Ian says, what he does. I want to find out a bit more about him. What's the best way for someone to find out a bit more and maybe even get in touch with you?
Yeah, so there's two answers to this. First, probably slightly cocky answer, is if you put my name into Google, I'm very proud to say, doesn't matter which country you are in on the planet, I'm on page one. So really? I've tried it with a VPN. You can go to anywhere in the world. You put my name into Google, I'm on page one. The second more sensible business-like answer is if you tap into Google, into your browser, iandixon.co.uk, you'll find me. So, and of course, all the socials. So, yeah.
Brilliant. So just look for Ian Dixon in Google. Other search engines aren't available. You will find him.
Bing.
And... Ian Dixon.
Ask Jeeves has gone, hasn't it? Tell me Ask Jeeves has gone.
It has. I'm not entirely convinced Alta Vista is around anymore either. I think we're
Us oldies remember all the old IT search when they first kicked in. Ask Jeeves, Yahoo, even before Google, some of those.
So. Yeah, I remember Archie and Gopher. God, that's going back a bit.
Yes.
Half the audience now going, what the heck are they on about?
It's got technical.
Yeah. But yeah, check him out, iandixon.co.uk. He's, of course, on most huge number of the socials. I've got all of the links to all of Ian's socials. They're in the show notes for this page, for this episode, which you'll find, as always, if you go to keithblakemanoble.com/show, look for the one with Ian Dixon. You'll find links to all of his socials, find more information about him. But do check him out. Get in touch. He really is a lovely guy. He's a wonderful coach. He's not one of those ones that will shout at you when you're not getting everything right. he's very reassuring, and he knows his stuff. Yeah. Ian, thank you so much for taking the time out to be with us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. So, and if anybody's got any questions, they want any help or advice, drop me a line. So I just is my goal. You know, I just want to be able to help as many people as I can. So thank you for the opportunity, Keith. Love the show. Loving the Dicky Bow and the beard. I've got beard envy. That's the truth. So yeah, take care and stay safe, everyone. That's an important message right now. So because it's, you know, still very much out there. So just stay safe.
Certainly is.
Fabulous. Thanks, mate.
Thank you so much, Ian. And thank you, dear viewer, dear listener. Thank you for catching it. Hope you've enjoyed this as much as I've enjoyed chatting with Ian. As always, if you like it, give us a comment, a like, a subscribe, share it with your friends, check out the other episodes. We'll catch you in another episode very soon. And meanwhile, I'm going to leave you with one of Ian's favorite quotes. Never wish your life was easier. Wish that you were better.
You've been listening to the Keith Blakemore Noble Radio Show. To find out more, please visit KeithBlakemoreNoble.com.